Hello and welcome back to the WTF1 podcast, where we have had our first Grand Prix of the 2024 season. Bahrain happened at the weekend. It was on a Saturday, which was very weird to get our heads around. We're going to talk about that later on. But of course, I am joined, as always, by the brilliant Amber Jones. Here she is, sat next to me. Welcome.
Thank you,
Hayden. Did you enjoy Bahrain?
I actually really enjoyed Bahrain. Now, there's a few comments on the media about it wasn't the most exciting race. I thought it was super exciting just because it was the first Grand Prix. So, okay, there wasn't loads of battles on track and obviously Max dominated, but there was a few little interesting things that went on that I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand where social media is coming from, that some people didn't like it. They don't like the Max domination. I think it's the problem that we've kind of got at the moment, where we had such an influx of fans in 2021, where we had that such a big season between Lewis and Max. And now all those people have come in, they're kind of expecting that every season is kind of like this. You know, there's a lot of drama, there's a lot of battles going on. You know, this is normal Formula One. For me, I've grown up with, as a kid, every now and then popping in with the Schumacher domination, and then the Vettel domination, and then Hamilton domination, and now we're in the Verstappen domination era. Like, you're going to get these domination, but it doesn't mean that the racing is not exciting. We had some really good battles. Carlos Sainz is feisty. He's going for it this season. And I kind of wrote him off in a way that I thought the Ferrari were going to fully back Charles Leclerc. And Sainz is like, I don't care. You can tell me what to do. I'm going to come out of the blocks. I'm still going to come out fighting.
No, I said
it was a brilliant drive.
If you listen back to our podcast, I was like, Sainz is not here to play. He is fully going out. He's going to fight for those podiums. He's going to show that he's on par or better than Leclerc, because he wants Ferrari to go, oh, have we made a mistake? I mean, bringing in Hamilton, it's not really a mistake, but he's going to make it known to the team that you might have lost a very integral part to his team. But hopefully someone else snaps him up later down the line. If he goes to Audi, obviously the rumours are still spinning around that. So hopefully he moves somewhere. But I am here for the Ferrari battles. I'm just hoping they don't make it worse with some dodgy strategies.
Well, I called it on Twitter. I think they are going to have some collision at some point this season. It's going to happen. Like, I don't know when, I don't know where, but it is going to happen. It's going to be spicy between the two of those. And it's to be expected. With Sainz, now he is trying to push his CV. He's trying to show all the teams out there, this is who I am. This is what I can bring to your team. Sign me up. And there are a lot of seats potentially available next season. Red Bull, they've had a good start to the season. Sergio Perez, okay, qualifying was off, but not as far as maybe he has been over the last year.
Yeah.
P5, and then the race pace of the car easily allows him to get back up into P2, and it's nice and comfortable. And more, you know, results like that is going to help him, in all fairness, secure his seat, because all he needs to do is finish second. As long as he's finishing second,
and
even in the championship, he's fine. I think he's...
But what happens to Perez and quali? What goes on in his head, or something with the car? Why is it always that he doesn't do super well in quali, but the next minute he's fine in the race?
I think with Sergio, I think there's always been this thing around him that he is a really good race driver and he's really good at looking after his tyres. And in qualifying, you don't want to be that. You need to be aggressive. You need to be driving on the knife's edge. You need to be on the limit for the whole lap to put in a pole position lap. I don't believe that he is a qualifying driver.
No.
Whereas Valtteri Bottas is kind of like the opposite. Valtteri Bottas was incredible in qualifying. He was able to match Hamilton, beat him on the qualifying sessions. But then in the race pace was there sometimes, but the racecraft was maybe not there compared to other drivers.
And
so I think those two
Bottas,
are very switched.
He always knew that because he was the second driver in relation to Hamilton, he's not going to go super aggressive if it came to, you know, him and Hamilton battling out. They'll always let Hamilton be first, unless there's something where Bottas was really impressive and they had to let him go first for whatever reason. But I think Bottas and Sainz as well, with those drivers that you thought were just strong, more competent, you know, teammates. But I think now they're both showing they're strong drivers on their own.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm interested to see that Red Bull dynamic over the course of the season. And if Perez can keep this up, then I think that Red Bull seat could potentially close. Then you're looking at Mercedes as an option. Mercedes at the Bahrain Grand Prix, they had a lot of issues. A lot of overheating. George Russell had a really good qualifying and then a really good start to the race. He was running up on the podium for the first half of the race. And then the car started having these overheating problems. He was then overtaken by Charles Leclerc as well. And and was nearly caught by Lando Norris at the end. Like, Lando was only about a second off of him by the end of the race. So Mercedes are starting to have a few little issues creeping. Hamilton, not a good qualifying session from him. I mean, it's very close there, so you can't really say it's not a great qualifying session, but compared to his teammate, he's not there. Like,
when
he was ninth, I think everyone was shocked. That's the problem, though. It's so close now between your Ferrari, your Aston, your McLaren, your Mercedes, all in qualifying. And then even Red Bull. I mean, Max Verstappen was 2/10 clear, but I reckon there's going to be some qualifying sessions where Red Bull are very much in the mix and qualifying again, like last season. And then over the course of the race, their race pace just kind of like sees them through.
But what I think is quite exciting, though. I know obviously people are saying it was potentially like a boring race, but you did have that nice battle between the top to midfield of like McLaren, Aston Martin, Ferrari, Mercedes. They were all, you know, really fighting for it, and the positions were swapping and going left, right and centre, which I thought was quite nice. And that's why you do have to take away a little bit from Red Bull being 1-2, probably most of the time throughout the season. But watch everyone else, even like the end of the grid. Hülkenberg, what? We thought he was going to do great. He made it into Q3. Mm-hmm. Everyone's buzzing. You get to the race, first corner, first lap, front wing damage. Then he's right at the back. He's like P19. We're gutted for him. But then, you know, he starts to jump up again. I thought, wow. And obviously Magnussen was a little bit higher than him in positions. But I was like, okay. Haas are onto something here. Yeah. Alpine are at the back. What is going on?
Yeah, do not write off Haas if I'm looking right now. So at the end of the race, Nico Hülkenberg finished 16th. Mm-hmm. Kevin Magnussen finished 12th. And I think it was a really good recovery drive from Nico Hülkenberg. Like, he was a full pit stop down, basically, compared to the others. He beat both Alpines. I mean, that just says how in the mud Alpine are. Valtteri Bottas had a 50-second pit stop. So that also puts him way out of the mix. And of course, Logan Sargeant had a moment where we thought we were going to get 19 finishes in the race because he pulled over to the side of the track with an issue, but then was able to get the car back up and running to a good standard again. So that obviously took him quite a bit out of it too. But for Nico Hülkenberg, a good recovery drive, beating both of the Alpines. I don't know whether that says more about Haas's performance or Alpine's lack of performance, because both cars were at the back, both cars really struggled. But, you know, Magnussen was up there holding off both the RBs, was holding off Yuki Tsunoda. And then, of course, Ricciardo was allowed through to go and attack and couldn't get the job done. And he was actually closing into to Zhou later on in the race, but Zhou did pit a lot earlier than a lot of the other drivers. Really strong showing from Haas in qualifying. I say this all the time, Nico Hülkenberg is an absolute beast in qualifying. It was his strong suit last season. The car let him down because he'd always sort of come back down to where Magnussen was because the race pace wasn't there. The tyre wear was atrocious. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to see what Haas can do over the course of the season, and more notably what Nico Hülkenberg can do, because I've always rated him and always wished that he was, you know, in the right seat at the right time. Yeah. I just think a top seat has never really opened up in a time when he's really been performing, which has been unfortunate for him. But strong driver, and I think
it would be nice to see him in a different team, I think, and a stronger car. But yeah, it's shown me that Haas might have been sandbagging a little, which is what I said. I was like, no. They're saying, you know, we're not going to perform well. Testing's going to be a shambles.
Hustled.
I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it. And Hayden, you were like, Amber, I think you're being a bit too optimistic. I was like, no. They've got something in the bag and it's sand. They are sandbagging way too much. And look at them. They've got the pace. The car probably isn't where they want it to be, but it's a lot better than probably what they expected it was going to be. Mm. So it's looking good for them. Very unfortunate for Alpine, but what are they going to do to bring it back? They've got loads of work to do this season to get that car back up to even P10. Is that possible? Can they make it into the top 10? Are they always going to be the back of the grid now?
I mean, they could be doing, for them, I hope they're doing something like a McLaren where they're taking a really big hit early on in the season, like last year. And then at some point, some really big upgrades are coming and they're going to be competitive again. But the problem I've always had with Alpine is they've never been a team that really express a lot of ambition in the sense that, you know, you've got other teams like Aston Martin, for example. Mm-hmm. They say, we want to be at the top of the sport. You know, anyone can say that. Okay, cool. How are you going to do it? We're going to build this huge campus, the best facilities Formula One has ever seen. Mm-hmm. We're going to get the right people in the right jobs, and we're going to give them the right tools to put together the best car. Now, it's never guaranteed. You can have all the money in the world, all the people in the world, and you can still make a terrible car. Mm-hmm. But at least you're giving them the opportunity. Whereas with Alpine, there's never really that sort of ambition. It's never sort of like, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. It's like, okay, how are you going to do that? I don't know, we're just going to build a good car.
Yeah.
Cool, but how? Like, so I always do struggle to see how Alpine and that kind of group are going to ever get back up to being a top team once again. But you never know. They might surprise me some point throughout the season with a big upgrade package and could be competitive again.
Potentially. I mean, the Aston Martins, I bet you were sad, but then quite happy with your boy Lance Stroll.
I was gassed. I mean, it was like at the start, that little tap from Hülkenberg. Mm-hmm. Whenever I see Lance Stroll spin around at the start, I'm like, oh my God.
Gutted, he's crying.
No, but I'm also like, here it comes again. He's done some sort of mistake and he's going to make my life even harder to try and defend mm-hmm. him. But so he was taken out and I was like, okay, mm-hmm. it's not his fault. And what a comeback drive. I think up there as one of the potential driver of the days because he was
the back,
quite far off. He finished one place behind his teammate. Yeah, I think Alonso was kind of screwed with his strategy. They were trying to go for less pit stops than everybody else. Go for the two-stopper, maybe the one-stopper, I think it was. I think it was the one-stopper because they all did two stops in the end. So he tried to go for the one-stop, didn't quite work out, dropped impact behind both Joe and Lance, but was able to recover with the fresher tyres and overtake both of those. And I think for Alonso anyway, I think he probably would have been in that no man's land area anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly behind Oscar, a little bit closer, potentially in the fight with the McLaren and the Mercedes of Lewis Hamilton. But I think still the race pace of the Aston was just a little bit further off. So I think, P9 was right for Alonso, but a good recovery for Lance Stroll. And yeah, potential driver of the day for me, for sure.
No, I would agree. Because at the beginning, I think I was one of those people to be like, oh, it's Lance Stroll again. You know, I can't back him, Hayden. Respect. I'm so sorry.
Put some respect on his
name. But yeah, after that, I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Mm. Whatever I said about you beforehand, Lance Stroll, you've really proved it to me that you are a great driver. And like we say, the Aston is probably smack bang in the middle, isn't it? You know, it's not super fast, not keeping up with the Ferraris, but it's not slow enough to be pitted against the Williams and the Alpines and whatever, right in the middle. So for me, I was like, okay, like you say, Alonso's strategy wasn't the best.
Yep.
But I was still happy with the overall performance of the Aston because I think they can then prove themselves. Mm-hmm. Now they know what to do.
They
know the tracks where they're strongest. They know the improvements they need to make. They've got two fab drivers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I know.
Yes.
I've just said that, Hayden.
Let's go.
How do you feel?
Converting.
I know. Maybe I'm a Lance Stroll lover too. No, I do think they've got two strong drivers and I'm hoping to see some podiums for them. And now I think it is possible. I'm putting it out there. We're going to see some Aston Martin podiums.
Come on, let's go. I still think we're a little bit of the ways off. But again, hopefully they can do a McLaren from last year.
Yeah.
A lot of improvements over the season. And can get back up at the front fighting, or you know, particular circuits are really going to benefit them where they're going to be strong at. Mm-hmm. I think another potential shout for driver of the day and somebody else that went really under the radar, Zhou Guanyu. What a drive! Like, I know I'm biased about both of these drivers. You know, I'm massively in the Zhou Guanyu camp, and I was absolutely gassed for him. I was a little bit disappointed in qualifying just because it was a small mistake. Like, he just lost the rear end slightly out of the final corner and it would have cost you less than a tenth of a second, but he was beaten by Bottas by 1,000th of a second in qualifying. So, you know, that little mistake that didn't happen, you know, you never know. But ifs and buts, and was it George Russell said, carrots and nuts or something like that?
new saying now amongst the many sayings.
But the race was incredible.
About.
From 17th on the grid, I think he gained like 4 or 5 positions from the start. Like, his start was brilliant. And then I think a really good strategy as well from the state team to do that undercut. The undercut, again, is really powerful, just like it was last season. Was able to gain on the drivers in front and then never really lost it in the clear air. He was caught slightly by Kevin Magnussen at the end, and I thought, oh, maybe they're going to just bulk in him, but I think they timed it really well. There was still like a 2 second gap, 2-3 second gap between Joe and Magnussen that he was completely fine from those guys behind, and a really strong race. P11, just such a shame.
I know.
That you just missed out on points,
just
but still.
Just out the top 10.
A really strong drive, and I think it is going to be difficult for those teams to score points this season with no reliability issues, because we had every single driver finish the race for the first time ever at a first Grand Prix of the season, which is incredible to see. But, you know, I think, as we know, Red Bull very much clear at the top. Yeah. Ferrari, Mercedes, McLaren kind of in that fight, but they maybe slowly separate as the race goes on. And then Aston Martin a little bit below them, but they're still quite a bit ahead of the rest of the midfield or the lower midfield pack. So I think for those teams, it could actually be really difficult to score points this season. Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach is wasting the time of both the buyer and seller at every stage, especially when sellers are using shallow and outdated data. Your organization can overcome these challenges with technology that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to better outcomes like more pipeline, higher win rates, and larger deals. We call this deep sales, and we've built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/seller. That's linkedin.com/seller for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/seller and get started.
I think it would have been nice to compare both of the Kicks albums, though, because unfortunate for Bottas, really, with that pit stop that just ruins the rest of his race then. So for me, it would have been nice to see, you know, where they both would have ended up if they were on, you know, a clean strategy, having quite a clean race for both of them, to then make that comparison. But I completely agree with you. I was like, go on, Joe. When I was watching the race, I thought, Hayden's going to be a very happy man. His number two drivers, really, are up there doing well. Both of them, I'd say, maybe give them driver of the day. I don't know. But Tsunoda.
Yep.
So, Tsunoda and Ricciardo, there was little bit of a drama. Going on there. With obviously the driver swap, Tsunoda didn't want to swap at that time. He was quite angry. And then towards the end as well, when the race finished, they were still angry at each other, called each other names.
Even after the race, going at it. There's no excuse for that sort of behaviour on the cooldown lap. That shouldn't happen from a driver. That's really, immaturity is definitely showing through there. But for RB, they really messed up the strategy with Yuki.
Yeah.
Ricciardo, you know, worse qualifying than Yuki. Yuki beat him in the qualifying. And then I honestly feel like Yuki, had they got the strategy right, should have been in between Alonso and Stroll. Should have been in that 17, I think it is, second gap between those two drivers. Because he was definitely up there in a points position. And then they just mucked up the strategy massively. Just kept him out way too long. And unfortunately, lost him a lot of time. And then, of course, Ricciardo on better tyres, closes up to the back of Yuki Tsunoda. He's really struggling to get past Magnussen. There should always be... I don't mind teammates letting teammates through, okay? Especially if you're on a faster strategy. I think you should always be mindful to that and be like, okay, cool, let that guy through. That's fine. You know, he's on the soft tyres, I'm on the hards, he's on the better tyres. Let's see what he can do. But it should always be a sense of like, okay, Yuki, you've got two laps to overtake Magnussen. You don't overtake Magnussen, Ricciardo gets through.
Yeah.
That's fine. But if Ricciardo doesn't overtake Magnussen before the checkered flag, we're going to switch you back and you can regain your position. Now, I don't know what is communicated behind the scenes of the team, because for me, that kind of anger and frustration kind of feels like that deal was made, because I know they always talk about these scenarios. And Ricciardo said that in a post-race interview with Will Buxton, that they talk about all these scenarios after the race, and they knew that he was going to be on the softs at the end of the race, that if this scenario happened, that they were to switch. So maybe they discussed in that briefing room, but if you don't get past, I get that position back.
Yeah.
So that could be potentially where that frustration's come from, but I don't know. I don't know what was said behind the scenes. But for me,
it's difficult for the team,
that's
though,
what
isn't
should
it?
Happen.
Yeah, I think it's difficult because if they think they need to make that call last minute and it's not been discussed, it's actually impulsive, right? Yeah. This is what we think is the best strategy. They have to do it, but then it's understanding for the drivers to be like, what? Yeah. Where's this come from? Like, one, I don't believe in the strategy. Two, it wasn't even discussed. So I understand Yuki's frustration if that is the case. But then it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think we see Yuki be very opinionated. He's going to let you know. If he's not happy, he will tell you. And I think he gets under fire for that quite a bit. And then now you've seen Ricciardo react back after the race. So hopefully it's not going to be too much of a ruffle between the two teammates. I hope that they can continue to carry on. And if this happens again, that one of them needs to overtake, that it is seamless, that it's okay, and the team keep their values. Because I do think they're strong. And I think they can get up there in the top 10 somewhere, or literally just on the cusp. And I really thought Tsunoda was going to take it, but they just ruined that strategy. Yeah.
Interesting, though, between that two team dynamic. Obviously, Ricciardo did beat him in the race, but I do think Yuki did have the better race. In a weird way, people are going to be listening like, what do you mean by that? Ricciardo obviously beat him. But
no,
Yuki was screwed by the strategy.
Yeah.
Qualifying was a lot better. So it's interesting for Ricciardo. Obviously, there's this big hype around Ricciardo, like, oh, Ricciardo's going to smash Yuki. He's going to be back in that Red Bull, but... okay, we're one racing. There's still 23 races left to go in this season. But at the moment, Yuki is kind of, you know, laying down the foundations. he's asserting himself as potentially that number one driver. And if Red Bull do want to get rid of Checo, then and they do want to go to the academy, then Yuki Tsunoda could be that driver that, that comes through. So
well, he's
it's
still,
interesting.
He needs to show that he can be that number one driver, but he still also needs to show that he can be, you know, a team player. So it's so difficult for drivers because do you just go ahead and do what you want to do? Or do you think, no, okay, I need to follow the team orders. I need to just stay in line with it. Until they say, right, see you later, we're not keeping you. I feel like you need to have both of that, don't you? But like we mentioned with Sainz, because he's a goner.
Yeah.
He's like, right, I'm off.
Yeah.
Whatever. So potentially, you know, if that seat opens for Yuki, that would be really exciting.
Yeah, it's a weird dynamic that you're suggesting there because, like, part of you, yes, you should be always be a team player. But then you also, it's a weird thing, Formula One, because it's a team championship, but there's also a driver's championship. So if you allow, you know, your teammate and always be the really good team player, other teams might just look at that and go, okay, you're clearly the second driver because you're not performing as well. But you could be faster or screwed over by strategy, whatever. And you've been a good team player to not really battle your teammate and let him through and help the team as much as possible.
Well, then it makes you appealing to maybe teams on the lower end of the grid. But those top teams won't really want you unless they're just looking for someone consistent that will carry through their number one driver. So it's difficult. How do you want to portray yourself as a driver?
Yeah, I would not want to be in that position because for me, I don't know what I would do. I mean, I wouldn't be a good Formula One driver, to be fair. I'm probably too much of a team player.
I don't know.
I feel like I'm too much of a team player. But then I don't know. When I'm racing online, I suppose if you're in a fight for a championship or you're up front, you become a bit more aggressive. You become a bit more like a Max Verstappen-esque because I think you just kind of have to.
Yeah.
But if you're kind of in that midfield area, there's obviously not a lot of benefit. And I suppose you're not even racing for points at that moment. You know, Yuki Tsunoda was 13th, I think it was. So you're not even in points positions. It's just kind of for positions in case for some strange reason all those teams don't score any points and you want to try and get as many, you know, good positions as possible. Because at the moment, obviously, the state team are P11 or Joe's P11 and they're the top out of those team in the championship because they've got the P11 at the moment. So that would be the only reason. But, you know, there's a long season to go. Reliability issues are surely going to creep
in. Anything can happen.
Anything can happen. And I'm sure every team is going to score points because the field is close. Like, I think there's a lot of people moaning, going, oh, this is supposed to be a closed field and Max won by 22 seconds. Okay, yeah, over a race distance, 57 laps, that two-second gap in qualifying is going to increase over those 57 laps to get to us for the 22-second gap. But I think, you know, all teams separated by about a second in qualifying in Q1, that's close. Q3 was very close, bar Max Verstappen, really. So I think we have got a really close field, closer than most people have ever seen it. I mean, those people who bang on about, oh, the Senna days were the best or whatever. I mean, there were races where Senna would win by like 40 seconds and both McLarens would be miles up the field and they'd be a lap ahead of everybody else. So Formula One's never been a case of like, oh, it's always used to be close racing throughout the field. Yeah. It's always been
dominance at some point. But I think now, that's why I wouldn't brand it as Bahrain being a boring race because it gave me lots of optimism for the rest of the season. Because even with the Mercs, okay, they didn't have a great race. There was a few mechanical issues and the power unit was overheated. And we saw that in the Williams as well with the same Mercedes power unit. But I was like, they've got pace. It's not a strong track for them. Russell said that. He was like, it's not one of our worst, but it's not one of our strongest either. Yeah. But I still think they had pace, and I'm like, maybe they can find it somewhere. I knew Hamilton was going to struggle this season. That's why any predictions we've done, I've always put Russell above Hamilton. Everyone's been like, why? Like, what? Hamilton's more experienced, like, surely. And I thought, no, I've got more faith in Russell this season just because from what I saw last year and what we saw in testing. And I do think Hamilton's going to struggle, and I don't know if it's the car, if it's mentality, whatever it is. You know, we had a problem with his seat halfway through the race.
Yeah, it broke.
There's something going on there for Hamilton. I thought, Russell's not going to have those same issues. So that's why I do think we're going to see the Mercedes being quite strong as well. But then Ferrari, Charles Leclerc, tyre, locking up, the front tyre, he kept struggling with that. And I thought,
it's a difficult corner complex. That turn 9-10 is probably one of the toughest corners on the calendar. You're braking, you're downhill, you're turning. Front lockup is easy to do, but it just seemed to be like every single lap for
him. Literally. He was just struggling all the time. And even Bahrain, right, on The Sims, I'm no sim racer, but...
We know that.
I'm really not a sim racer. But Bahrain is so tricky. Because you think, you know, when you see a straight and I'm like, woo, yeah, let's go for it. Oh my gosh, here's the tightest corner in the whole history. And I never make the corner. I go over the whole track limits and everything. But then thinking, obviously, as a driver, that is it's a very technical, very tricky track because of the tight corners. Mm. So obviously they're going to struggle with that anyway, but then Charles kept struggling with that issue and I thought, Ferrari really needs to sort this. Otherwise, Sainz is going to be that number one driver for the rest of the season. I think if Charles keeps having issues, and unfortunately we've seen this throughout his whole career, he does have quite a few issues mm-hmm. in Ferrari and with Monaco, and we're not getting into that. But if that carries on, I do think that Sainz is going to outperform him.
I think there's definitely potential for that. It's not like Carlos Sainz has never been close to Charles throughout the two seasons previously that they've had together. Mm. I mean, those two have always been quite close in the championship with each other. And I think this season, Sainz is going to have that more consistency.
Yeah.
But I feel like if you want that driver who's going to go for it, who's going to be putting it on pole, who's going to be driving on a knife's edge, who's going to be, you know, the raw talent, that is Charles Leclerc. Mm-hmm. Charles Leclerc is, you know, in terms of raw talent, he is better than Carlos Sainz. But Carlos Sainz is smarter, I think. He's more consistent. Mm-hmm. I think at that start of the race, he didn't push, because he kind of dropped off a little bit from the leading pack at the start, but was conserving the tyres. And then, you know, when those guys, George Russell, Charles Leclerc, was struggling a little bit, he was like, cool, right, here's my chance to shine. Mm-hmm. You know, and then was able to go those extra laps. Okay, it did cost him the position to Charles Leclerc, who was able to do the undercut and get back ahead of him. But on fresher tyres was straight away, bam, see you later. Mm-hmm. I'm Ferrari number one here, and he overtook him. So I think it's going to be a really interesting dynamic. I think there's going to be a lot of drama between these two across the season. And I'm calling it. I called it earlier. I'm calling it. They are going to clash at some point this season.
They have to.
And if it happens at Monza,
I was
just thinking this.
I was like, it's going to be Monza, isn't it? It has to be Monza.
I feel like it could be, because that's the one race that both of them would want to be on that podium.
Yeah.
Because I think, as it stands right now, they are the team that is fighting for that third position. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a fight for third if it carries on like this throughout the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it could
unless
happen.
We have some sort of mechanical failure with Perez or Max or something, and then we've got both the Ferraris.
The exactly. There's a fight for the win.
Both on the podium. Who's going to take the win?
This could be definitely very interesting. One thing I wanted to talk about actually that is very unique to this weekend that's just happened is the first time, at least I've ever experienced it, I don't know if it's happened before in history, but a Formula One Grand Prix race on the Saturday, mm-hmm. which is just the first time, so it's new for me, and I'm interested to see how it works out for Saudi as well, because it's also going to be on the Saturday. Make sure you mark your calendars. Do not miss it.
Don't forget.
It's Saturday once again. So what we've just experienced, rinse and repeat, is going to happen again this weekend. I actually enjoyed it.
You did?
And I know we're in a unique position that this is our job. So we have the freedom, we have the luxury to watch. You know, on Friday, I'm there able to watch the F2 races and I'm able to watch qualifying and I'm able to watch the practice sessions on the Thursday because essentially this is my job,
yeah.
You know. So I have that freedom. I'm not in a retail job where I'm working on checkouts or anything like that. So I'm unable to watch the races and watch all the action. But for me and in this sense and more... across a weekend, it was nice to be able to, you know, do everything on the Saturday, but then have my Sunday nice and free and open. And I actually quite enjoyed it.
I think it's quite nice because, like you say, most people work on a Monday. So obviously the race has happened, potentially maybe, you know, everyone's having a Sunday roast or they're going to bed early or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you're not having loads of chatter on the Sunday, because everyone's getting ready for Monday. And on Monday, everyone's at work. So you kind of wait until people finish work or you're trying to chat throughout the day. Whereas on the Sunday, because the race wasn't on, you had the whole Sunday. You could text everyone. You could chat to everyone. What do you think about the race? You even had Saturday, you know, if you weren't going out partying or whatever. Mm-hmm. You had the Saturday to chat as well. And I thought that was a lot nicer. So would I prefer to see most races on a Saturday than a Sunday? Possibly. I think because there's so many racing series out there, mm-hmm. sometimes they clash. And that's another problem where like on Saturday mm-hmm. you're watching a million things and on Sunday you're watching a million things. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's nicer to have that separation. F1, if you're listening, forget about Sundays. Put your races on a Saturday. But then I feel like some people will complain if it was night races and then they're going out Saturday night. Mean,
it's not gonna, it's never gonna benefit everyone, because some people who really loved it were the Australian audience. You know, those people on that side of the globe, because they didn't have to go to work on a Monday, sleep deprived, because they stayed up all night, or they got up really early to watch the race. So for those guys, they're like, oh, this is lovely. I've got a full day to recover and be nice and fresh and good again for work on the Monday. But then I can imagine for the American audience, it's pushed back a little bit closer to the end of the working week. So it could be a bit more like, oh, no, actually, I don't enjoy this too much.
Unless they just keep mixing it up. So like they've done now, obviously, we've got two of them on a Saturday. We also have Las Vegas on a Saturday.
Yeah, Las Vegas, well, yeah. I mean, it was Saturday for America, but it was like Saturday nighttime, so it was like Sunday. I think it was like 6 a.m. here.
Technically, it's Sunday, but
5, 6 a.m. here, I think it was. So it was very early.
Mm-hmm. But I think just switch it up. Why not? Try different formats. Mm-hmm. Get that reverse grid in there as well. Just throwing that out. You know, if you want to make Formula One less dominated with Max Verstappen, throw in a reverse grid.
A reverse grid. I mean, it would make things more exciting, but then, you know, it's one of those things. Maybe it's like old school Formula One fan in me. The old man is coming out. And it's
you
like,
don't
how
see
much
it.
Do we want to fabricate the sport? Formula One has never been, it's never been, in all fairness, it's never been about the racing. I honestly, I'll 100%, you know, die on that hill. It's never been about the racing. People don't watch Formula One necessarily for the racing. If you want that, you go to F2. F2's got much better racing. IndyCar's got incredible racing. Even Formula E, you know, has wheel-to-wheel racing, unpredictability, who's going to win. Formula One is about being the best. It's about being the pinnacle. You know, if we want it to be a lot closer and we want everyone to have the same machinery, make it a spec series. But I would hate that. I would never want it to be a spec series, because I love rocking up to a brand new season and you're looking at the cars, you're like, wow, that team's done that. Red Bull have come out with like what looks like the Mercedes and they're going to try and do better. Wow, they've come out with a Mercedes S car and they're able to dominate still. Ferrari are doing this with their car. Haas are doing that with their car. You know, you wouldn't get that if it was a spec series and things were a bit more fabricated. With a reverse grid, it's not quite the same in that kind of sense. It is a bit more for the racing, but then teams will always find loopholes around that to be like, where's the best place to qualify and how do we get around this sort of thing? You know, Red Bull could go, cool, yeah, we're qualified 10th in the pack. We know our race pace is going to really help us in the sprint race. And it's also in the full race, we're going to be able to get back up to the top rather than go for pole. Mm-hmm. And then we're at the back and we might struggle to get through the field. And we're in that kind of like tough area where there's a lot of cars.
Yeah, so there'd be too many problems with that, wouldn't there, if they actually did a reverse grid. I think it's interesting though that you say that, because people, I think, want Formula One to be purely about the racing. Mm-hmm. And there's all these different conversations going on, you know, is it really like a driver's sport? Because if the best driver's in the worst car, then what can they do? They can't show off to their full capacity. But then you argue that you can put an amazing driver in the best car. It doesn't mean that they're going to perform amazingly, because they didn't have the abilities to push that machinery where it should be. So then again, I think you can argue against it is a driver's sport, because it's more difficult on the drivers depending on what car they're in. But I do think it's more of an innovative sport as opposed to, like you say, super close racing. So it just, you need to kind of change your angle at how you look at the sport. And I think if you focus on that it's more about innovativity. Is that correct? Innovativity? That sounds wrong.
Innovative.
You know what? We're going with that. Innovative. That's the word we're going
innovativity.
For.
Innovativity.
If you look at it from that angle, you can then appreciate, like you say, you know, what work goes into the cars. The fact that you've got everyone in the factories working so hard to get the best car out there. There's problems. It makes it interesting for the drivers. And then you've got a whole new perspective on what is the essence of Formula One.
So what we need is more drama.
Yes.
Closer racing, potentially. And races to be on Saturdays.
There you go.
That's
We've just sorted out all
That's
the problems.
Give me races on Saturdays. Do you know what? I'll be happy with that, because then that means Sunday is free and it doesn't clash with IndyCar, and I can get on board with that this season
but
as well.
But then it clashes with Creator Series, doesn't it? Or did you have time?
We can move that about. Yeah. You know, Formula One comes first. Creator Series, we're not that big of a deal.
Move out of the way, Formula One. Creator Series is here.
Hayden Geiser's F2 Championship. Bring it on. One of the biggest topics that has kind of happened, that's kind of overshadowed the start of the Formula One season, is this whole Christian Horner drama that's come out. And now Jos Verstappen has come out and said that there's a lot of unrest amongst the team, mm-hmm. and that even Christian Horner needs to step down. And now that's started a lot of debate and a lot of rumours, especially after seeing Jos Verstappen speak to Toto Wolff, that potentially Max Verstappen to Mercedes could happen. I mean, Toto Wolff was asked about it and he said, never say never. Mm-hmm. What's your take on this whole situation that has kind of, you know, been going on over the last, I suppose, couple of weeks now?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult one, really, because, you know, the investigation got cleared. Mm-hmm. And then now things have been brought back up again. And obviously, Jos speaking on it throws a whole new thing into the fire, really. So it's a difficult one because you don't know what's going on. We don't know the truth. We don't know the facts. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to give a valid opinion on it. But I think if you've got other people in the team or around the team saying it's probably the best decision to step down, mm-hmm. to move away, you would take that as being quite credible. You know, mm-hmm. if Jos is out there saying, look, there's lots of drama now within the team, why would you want to keep that going? If it's been cleared and it's come back and now everyone around you is saying X, Y, and Z, you would think it'd be wise for Formula One and for mm-hmm. Red Bull to say, look, Christian, let's take a step back from this. Maybe revisit it in a year's time. Maybe he comes back and everything's cleared. But right now, it's really clouding Formula One. It's bringing lots of negative attention to it, to Christian, to mm-hmm. Red Bull, to Christian's family. And it's not really something that you want, because then it's going to take away also from Max dominating mm-hmm. and Max doing so well. He's going to get these questions all the time of, oh, Max, what do you think of so-and-so? And, you know, now this has come out and people in your family saying this. And I just think it's adding too much drama that's so unnecessary right now. It should be a private matter. Take him away from the situation and there you go. Sort it between the people involved.
Yeah, I mean, Formula One was all over the front pages and the back pages of all the newspapers.
Yeah.
At the start of the season, which as a Formula One fan, you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. But it's there for the wrong reasons. It's not really talking about this amazing newest season that we're going to be having, the longest season in history that Formula One's ever had. It's about this situation that has occurred over the last couple of weeks. And I think it puts a dark shadow over the sport at the moment. But it is interesting that there is this disarray amongst the team. And I think there's a lot of rumours, not just about Christian Horner and whether he'll step down or he'll go away. I mean, to be fair, if Jos Verstappen's telling you to leave, then things are bad. Yeah. You know, I think even Bernie Eccleston said at one point that Christian Horner should step down. Again, if Bernie Eccleston's saying that you should be stepping down, things are bad. Mm-hmm. So very interesting in that situation. But then also, what does that mean for the rest of the team? You've got Adrian Newey, whose contract is kind of tied to Christian Horner's. I know he's said in the past that he's dedicated to Red Bull. He's happy to stay there no matter what happens. But, you know, as someone who is one of the key figures in the team, if you were to say, oh, if he goes, I'll go, mm-hmm. then potentially in that team, they're going to be like a little bit, the motivation might be a little bit lower.
Yeah.
They might not want to work as hard. And obviously, you don't want to do that at the start of the season because you want to push on through this long, really long season mm-hmm. to carry on dominating the sport as Red Bull. But it could be interesting for him. You know, where does he go? For me,
Ferrari
potentially. He's always said he wanted to do Ferrari and he's always wanted to do a Hamilton or an Alonso car, and he can tick off two birds with one stone right there.
Well, is it, do you stay and, you know, you've made this great car, mm-hmm. you know, you're backing it up the whole way. Do you stay there and continue to make those new innovations to the car? Or do you jump mm-hmm. over to a new challenge, see that Ferrari are doing quite well at the minute and try to carry that on for them? So it depends really whether he's with Red Bull mm-hmm. or he's only with Red Bull because of Christian Horner and he's staying there, or does he want to go to Ferrari? It's where his intentions lie, mm-hmm. isn't it? Which we don't know. Mm-hmm. We don't know. We could see anything.
Exactly.
He could go to Ferrari. It could be great.
I mean, so with Max Verstappen, those conversations have happened between Jos and Toto. Is that just two people catching up, or is there more in that? I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, to be fair. You're a bad manager of a driver if you're not speaking to all of the teams.
Yeah.
If you're not just having little conversations just every now and again, just remind them, just like, yeah, I mean, we're free to have a chat. They might not offer you or might not have a car. I mean, you know, Stake aren't going to go to Jos and be mm-hmm. like, oh yeah, we can give him this, that, and he's going to dominate next season. He'd be like, all right, yeah, nice try.
Stay in your lane.
You know, they might try and sort of see what, and they'll be like, look, no offense to you guys, but we're not interested. Okay, it's fair enough, but you can still have those conversations.
But I don't know how the Mercedes seat looks appealing to them at the minute, though. That's why I'm like, if Hamilton's left, you know, why would Max be like, do you know what? Yeah, I'm going to take Hamilton's seat when he's ninth in qualifying at Bahrain.
I think it's more the fact that Red Bull could collapse, is that essence. They're thinking that, you know, it's always good to have an option in case something does happen, that you are there ready and able to jump ship. Because the last thing you want is for Red Bull to collapse and then you're kind of stuck in a team for a couple of seasons and you're not fighting for a championship and you're not in any sort of fight. Not saying that that could happen, but if a lot of other people move on, Adrian Newey moves on and, and other really key figures amongst the team are pinched from other teams because they're like, oh, you've had this really good thing with Red Bull where you're a dominating team, but do you fancy a challenge where you then build this team up and win a championship with this team? They're like, oh, actually, do you know what? I do fancy a new challenge.
Yeah.
So something like that could happen.
That's the thing, because behind the scenes, I feel like a lot of people maybe don't realise is the engineers do jump between different teams as well. If they get an offer somewhere else, depending on, you know, what their contracts are saying, they will go somewhere else. So it is true. I think if Christian and Adrian do leave, potentially you will see like an influx of engineers going somewhere else as well. So I think you're right. Red Bull could be affected if that happens. But it's just, it's a tricky one, though.
Is 2025 too soon, though? Because that's when the seat's obviously open. So that
it depends how this plays out.
But if it does happen, oh my God, silly season is sillying.
It would be.
Hamilton to Ferrari for 2025. Max Verstappen to Mercedes for 2025. All right, okay, we're just speculating at this point.
I know. I'm trying to see it, Hayden. I can't see it.
It would be mental.
But it would be crazy if that happened. And then people can't complain about these little problems in
Formula One. One reason, before we end this topic, one reason why I would say potentially that is a tasty option is the last big engine regulation change was 2014. And the one team that absolutely smashed out of the park and got it right were Mercedes. Mm-hmm. Mercedes engines were not quite literally on fire. That was all the other teams. But their engines were incredible. And that's something that Max could be looking at. Okay, cool, I'll go for 2025. We'll take a hit for one season. But from 2026 onwards, if they get the engines right, which they have a history of doing, then see you later. I'm going to dominate
so
again.
It's so difficult though, isn't it? Because it's just, can you have that much faith? Can you hope that something's going to take a turn and get better? It's like, are you going to take that risk? And in Formula One, you need to take risks. But if you're,
Lewis Hamilton did it. He went to Mercedes from McLaren. Everyone's like, you are going from Man United to West Ham. And what happened? He dominated. So you just never know.
I know.
You know, they know more behind the scenes with these teams and where they are progressing. And, you know, Ford are coming in for Red Bull. That's an interesting dynamic because Ford don't currently make engines. Well, I mean, they make engines, but they don't make Formula One engines.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where you're like, could they come in? And like Honda came in late to the power units and were terrible for quite a few seasons. So is Max also looking at that being like, oh, Ford might come in and might not do that well.
Yeah.
So it could be interesting.
These are all the chats going on right now.
Who knows? Watch this space.
The teams.
Watch this space.
Exciting.
Here we go then, Amber. Your favourite part of the podcast.
It is
time for the WTF1 hot takes of the week. This is where we, you know, go through our Twitter. We've asked you guys at home. And if you want to send in your hot takes for the next episode of the podcast, make sure you go check us out on Twitter, the official WTF1 account, and send in your hot takes there. But this is where we react to your hot takes. We discuss them, we debrief them, and we rate them out of 5 and see how spicy they are. So let's get into the first hot take of the day.
The first hot take is,
and this is from at SDBestie8. And
oh,
this
is Esty Bestie.
The cost cap being introduced means it's impossible for teams to close the gap to Red Bull, which is a fair point. Mm. And I really am. I saw this and I was excited by it because I really want to dive into this because there's definitely pros and cons. The cost cap, I feel like, has brought all the teams closer.
Yeah.
There's a second between everybody in Q1. But I also agree that those teams that were able before, Mercedes, Ferrari, to just throw money. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Mercedes are struggling now because they can't spend as much money as they used to before.
Yeah.
I think they were very, you know, they had a lot of money behind themselves. So they were able to spend loads. So I think, it's a good point that Mercedes can't catch up and can't overtake Red Bull because they can't just throw money at it. But then also, I feel like it allows teams to be more intelligent about what they build and where they spend their money, rather than just be like, let's throw loads of money at it. Where do we need to improve? How do we get the best out of this budget that is the same across the field?
I do think it's a difficult one. I don't know where I'm going to put this on the spiciness level yet, but I think it's a difficult one because obviously they would have sat down before they made the cost cap decision to think, is it going to help or is it going to hinder? Mm-hmm. And like you say, there are pros and cons to it, but I guess Red Bull have been spending, obviously, you know, so much money to get the car where it is now. So they already have all of this understanding of what they need. Mm-hmm. So if you put a cost cap on it, it's probably not going to affect them too much because they're already so high up. So then it is a disadvantage to the other teams because, like you say, now they can't spend the money that they would have spent to catch up to where Red Bull is. But then the caveat to that is it has made for closer racing. Mm-hmm. So it has made it more interesting because now the teams are getting a little bit similar to each other because they can only spend, you know, the same amount if they've got that much money. So, yeah, it's a spicy one, I think, because it's kind of still allowing for this Red Bull domination. Mm-hmm. So maybe it is a bit of a hindrance.
Yeah, I think for smaller teams, for those teams that are in the midfield backmarkers, I don't really know what to call them, but that kind of section of the Stake, the RB, the Alpine, the Haas. Am I missing anyone? I feel like I'm missing someone. But no, those sort of areas, Williams.
Yeah.
Those teams, it helps them. Because if you don't have the cost cap in place, Williams before weren't even spending enough money to get to the cost cap. It was only once the cost cap was introduced, they were like, okay, cool, we can find this money to spend it if there's a reason for us to spend it that we're on equal playing field as everyone else, even the same with Haas. And we saw with those teams, Williams for so many seasons were miles off the pace. They were a laughingstock in that sort of sense. They were just so far off the pace.
Yeah.
Same with Haas for 2021. So far off of everybody else, because they just didn't have the money to really compete year on year on year. Mm-hmm. And they were saving that money, of course, for 2022. So it's definitely allowed those teams to be not only closer to the top guys and not only allowed to score more regular points, but to be in a fight with other teams and not just be, okay, cool, we're just racing each other at the back like George Russell and Robert Kubica were, and then George Russell and Nicholas Latifi were.
And no one's really watching them. And the sponsors don't get enough time to show off, obviously, their brands because the car's not being shown or the coverage isn't there. So, yeah, I do think you're right. I think it hinders the top teams. It helps the bottom teams. Mm-hmm. But that's what we've been pushing for. We want to see those bottom teams, obviously, come up the field.
But that's in theory. What you've just said is where the cost cap would work, is it hinders the top teams and it helps the bottom teams. So therefore, in theory, you're thinking, so that should mean that all the teams kind of come together and we have this big fight. But the problem is, all it takes is one team to get it right and to absolutely smash it out of the park with what they need to do. Mm-hmm. And then the problem is they will just carry on that little extra step ahead. Say they are, you know, they're 10 steps ahead of everybody, or even just 5 steps ahead of everybody. They will stay 5 steps ahead of everybody.
That's the problem.
Across every single season.
They were already there.
Because Mercedes can't spend buckets loads, Ferrari can't spend buckets loads.
Yeah.
And even, to a sense, I suppose McLaren as well, can't spend loads of money. And Aston Martin, because obviously Aston Martin are, as we know, loaded. So they would also be another team that would just throw loads of money at it and would try and get back up to the top. But we don't see that now. So yeah, there's definitely pros and cons to it, for sure.
Yeah, I think spiciness level for this hot take's got to be... Oh, no. Oh, Hayden, it's when I need to make a decision. No, I'd say...
I'm going to go 4 on this one. I think it's quite spicy.
It is spicy because, you know, and if you know, listen to these hot takes, I will rate a hot take on how debatable it is. That's how spicy it is. If it's not debatable, it's not spicy. And if it is, super spicy. So for this one, I'm going to give it a 3.
Okay, we got there in the end.
Right in the middle.
I liked how you delayed. You explained so you could think. Yeah. Right, on to the next hot take. This is from at Don Carello. I think I've said that right. Mm-hmm. Alonso would win the championship if he wasn't in his current car is the biggest myth among F1 fans.
Oh, so they're saying obviously Alonso wouldn't win the championship if he's in a better car like a Red Bull.
Yeah. They're basically saying Alonso's washed. Well, they are saying Alonso's washed, and even in a top team, he would not win the championship.
There's so many different variables.
Fully disagree with, because I put Alonso up there. This is just my own personal opinion. So if you disagree with me, that's fair enough. That's your opinion. You know, I've got nothing against that because he's not in a top car. So neither of us can prove right or wrong. And I like that debate. That's fine. But I think Alonso is one of the best drivers Formula One has ever had. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if you put everyone, we spoke about it, if there was a spec series, the top guys, I feel like would be Hamilton, Verstappen and Alonso.
Yeah.
Those three would fight for the championship.
I think this is a super spicy hot take because in my head right now, I'm going through all the different variables. Okay, if he was in Red Bull currently, would he beat Max Verstappen? And I think it's difficult because they're two drivers that are quite similar.
Only one way to see it. 2025.
The seat's open.
Put Alonso,
get Alonso
in there.
Yeah, honestly, I can't picture right now who would win out of those two, only because I think their driver craft is so similar. Whereas if you put him, let's say Ferrari are, you know, winning the championship, you've got Charles and you've got Alonso. I do think Alonso would probably beat Charles in that sense. Yeah. But with Verstappen, I don't know. But I think there'll be a nice fight there, and I think potentially
out. Like, that's why I want to see it, because the drama between those two would be insane.
They both got the same drive.
Alonso is a bit of a and I love it. You know, I'm not going to lie.
Is.
I absolutely love it. I mean, there was talk from the past that he would basically pay money to his teammates' engineers so that he would get the better, like he would get the better of his teammate.
He's here for the drama.
He
that's
is.
Alonso.
He's super duper competitive. There's a lot of gamesmanship in his brain going on there. And I think there's also similar traits with Max Verstappen that he's very brutal. He's very aggressive. You know, we've seen it even down to turn one in Bahrain. He put his car perfectly in the sense that he plays to the rules. Like, he doesn't play to the gentleman's agreement. He plays to the rules. He will squeeze you off and basically give you a choice of, you either get the hell out of there, or we're going to come together. So that's your choice. That's the choice that I'm going to give you.
It's that driver IQ that we've been speaking about recently.
That I'm also very high
apparently
on.
Apparently Hayden's really high, which
nine out of 10.
No, it actually is, to be fair. Racing against you, I'm like, oh, he made a sneaky move there. Now I can't get past. But
that's all I got. No pace, just like you.
Just the sneaky moves.
It's easier to think about what you're doing when you're driving slowly.
You heard it first. So I think Verstappen's driver IQ is very high, and I also think Alonso's is, but they've both got the aggression to like push them out there as well, where some drivers might be a little bit more cautious and maybe they would take that step back, you know, maybe not put drivers in that position if they think someone might crash into them or they move out the way. So, oh, this hot take is really, really good.
This hot take is hotting.
It's super spicy.
Yeah, I'd say it's super spicy. I think it's a five. I think it's a very spicy. Yeah, I think there's a lot of angry Alonso fans. The Spanish fans are passionate, and I respect it. I mean, you know, you've got to respect the passion.
Exactly.
And
Alonso's,
I think there's going to be a lot of people who are not going to be happy about this. They're going to be like, listen, all right, put him in that Red Bull and we'll see who comes out on top.
I would like to
see
that
Bull.
Happen. Please.
I want to see him in the Red Bull.
Formula One, if you're listening, and Red Bull, get him in that Red Bull seat. He's proved himself in Aston Martin that he can do it in a car that's not in the place where they want it to be. So, spicy hot take, five. I think Alonso could do it.
Right, let's get into our final hot take of the day. This is from at AlecDMLAFC0. I'm confident that Mercedes will never get it right again. Again. Which will put to bed what we spoke about Max Verstappen going to Mercedes.
Yeah, we'll just
in the proper
pretend that that's never happening.
Yep.
This is so spicy because I can understand why they're saying that because Mercedes really aren't where they used to be. And we've not seen, I mean, I do say Bahrain, we've seen a little bit, I'm a little bit optimistic, but we've not seen it where I think people are expecting to see it. So
if they can sort out the cooling on this car, the car will get better, I think. Russell had some really good pace. And I think, yes, okay, they had overheating problems, which is a big problem and something they do need to get over.
Yeah.
But if they do get over that and can still keep the pace without, you know, obviously making more room in the side pods to allow more air intake and cool down the car, that could potentially lose them pace. So they need to make sure that that does not happen. But I think they can at least be there. But the problem is, and we spoke about it already, this cost cap, they can't do what they did before, which was throw a lot of money. And I think the problem with Mercedes is something that Red Bull might go through if Horner were to leave and if Nui were to leave. If, you know, there's a lot of people that have dominated with Mercedes over so many seasons. And so now they're going, oh, you know, fancy a challenge. James Vowles, do you fancy, you know, coming and being team principal for Williams? You've gone and done it with Mercedes. You've won so many championships with them. Fancy a new challenge of rebuilding a small team? And it's like, yeah, sure, I'll take on that challenge. Someone else goes to Aston Martin. Do you fancy building up this? We're trying to make this a championship winning car. Fancy this challenge? And that's the problems Mercedes got, is that they've, a lot of their key figures have gone and they've left and they've gone to other teams.
Yeah.
And that is the problem that they've had. Will they ever get it right again? I don't know.
I know, I think so. I really do think so, because you have to take in consideration that Red Bull are dominating so much and they've got the pace way above everyone else. That makes Mercedes look worse than what they actually are. You pull Red Bull back a little bit, 100% Mercedes could get that back. 100%. I've got all faith in them. But unfortunate for them, like you say, the cost cap and the Red Bull domination is making it super difficult. They're a very smart team. I think they've got great values behind them that, I'm going to say it, values we don't see in Red Bull. Red Bull are ruthless, aggressive. Whereas I think Mercedes have that, but they have more morale, let's say. Just some more morals there and high morale in the team to get them in the place where they need to be again.
Say how you really feel.
I know. So sorry, Red Bull. But we've just seen it in Red Bull. They favour ruthlessness sometimes over maybe making a more good ethical decision.
But would you say that as a, you know, it's a Formula One, it's a business, and it is, sport is ruthless. You know, would you say that it is more beneficial to be ruthless rather than pandering around things and being like, cool, yeah, we'll give you time when you're clearly not getting the results? Like Nyck de Vries, for example, last season. Yes, okay, it was only a few races into the season and some will say he didn't get a chance. And you really do have to feel for these people in these positions because for Nyck de Vries, he's achieved his goal with being a Formula One driver and to have that taken away, God, that must be gut-wrenching. That must be absolutely horrible for a human being to go through. But there was also that sense that everyone could kind of see that it just wasn't going to get better. Well, it was going to get better, but not to a sense that...
not where they wanted it to.
You're not going to be in a situation where they want a next Max Verstappen. They want someone there ready to be able to take that mantle in case Max Verstappen does go, okay, cool, I'm going to another team. Yeah. They need someone else to jump in and be the next Max Verstappen,
It's difficult, isn't it? Because, of course, you have to. If you think someone's underperforming and you want your team to be doing well, you have to say, right, see you later. But I think the way they dealt with the whole Gasly and Albon situation, it did make them look like a bit of a harsh team. Well, we get it. Max was already number one. Max is already number one. You know what I mean? You know, is it okay to maybe nurse that driver a little bit more? Hopefully they have the potential. And at the end of the season, then you say, okay, see you later. But throughout the season, it's quite harsh, isn't it? So that's my only opinion against Red Bull. But I see what you're saying. You know, if you need to make that decision for the better of the team, you got to do it sometimes. But that's why I think Mercedes can nurture a driver, get there slower, but they'll get there. Slow and steady wins the race. Not in Formula One, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, Mercedes never coming back again, though. I don't know. I think they've got a strong lineup at the moment, obviously, with Hamilton and Russell. And who goes into that second seat? Is it Max? Is it Sainz? I love how we're throwing Max in there now.
I know. I can't believe you're putting
Kimi
Max
Antonelli
in there.
I mean, he did have a shocker. I mean, I think it's very difficult for Kimi Antonelli this season. There's a lot of pressure on his shoulders, and that Prema is not looking good in F2 right now because both him and Ollie Bearman, and Ollie Bearman is a very, very quick driver as well. Yeah. He had last season in F2. So both of them struggling in the Prema, it's going to be difficult for him to get those license points potentially if they don't improve across the season. So we might not see Kimi Antonelli in that seat, which is okay, fine. I think, you know, there could be a lot of pressure that allows maybe a Sainz to go in there instead.
Yeah.
But for Mercedes to never get it right again, I feel like
it
could be difficult. But then, I don't know, you look at a Ferrari, for example, and the last champion was Kimi Raikkonen in 2007. The last time they won the Constructors, I think, was 2007. Maybe it was 2008 as well. But, you know, they have struggled since. They've had cars that were able to fight, but they've never been able to actually win a championship again. And there's so many seasons, even for Ferrari before that, you know, it was so many seasons before they won a championship. Sometimes
you just can't make bold
things
statements.
Chop and change.
Yeah, you can't in Formula One. I don't think you can boldly say something. Because even with Red Bull now, let's say, you know, Horner goes, Newey goes, and something changes for them. No one was expecting that either. Yeah. So we were expecting Red Bull to just dominate the rest of the season, maybe the next few seasons. But we just don't know. So you can't make a bold statement. But I'm going to make a bold statement and say that I do think Mercedes can bring it back. Not this season, maybe not next season, but let's see, the season after. If you've got time, you know, just wait a few more years.
Well, there we go. Those are our hot takes. I think, do we rate that one? I said it was a 5. It's a spicy one, I think.
I'm going to give it a 4, just because I don't agree.
Okay, that's fair enough. So yeah, there we go. That's going to end today's hot takes and, of course, the podcast here today as well. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Don't forget, it's Saturday, the Grand Prix. It's not Sunday. It's Saudi this weekend. It's Saturday. We will be back next week, same time, to debrief and discuss the Saudi Grand Prix with myself and Amber. Make sure you follow us here on whatever platform you're listening to, and we'll see you on the next one. Bye-bye.